welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Tuesday, May 19th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. Pen Pals, Connecting Through Generations. A group of 5th and 6th graders and Fort Dodge retirees got a leg up on the life of social distancing. Students at Community Christian School and Fort Dodge residents who are part of the Retired and Senior Volunteer Program became pen pals at the beginning of the 2019-2020 school year. 10 students from Marsha Halbach's class participated. "We got their address first," said Halbach, who is in her 4th year of teaching at CCS. "We sat down as a class and talked about some of the guidelines for what makes a good friendship and filled the whiteboard for different topics. Then they went ahead and got started. One thing that was important for us is that they ask questions. Are you from this area? Do you have family? What are you interested in?" And then their job was to introduce themselves. Things like, "I have a dog. I like baseball." All of those things that are important to start a friendship. The first letters were sent out in September. Karen Thode was a recipient of a letter from Avonlea Hayek, 10, a 5th grader. And it didn't take long for Thode to see Hayek's talent. "She's a wonderful artist," Thode said. Hayek drew a picture for Thode. "I drew a koala bear and a panda," Hayek said, "my favorite animals." Hayek has had some practice. She started on a wall at her grandparents' house. "When I was really little, there was an upstairs playroom and I drew on the walls," Hayek said, "and it's still there." Thode, who worked at Target in Fort Dodge for 27 years, said the two also wrote to each other about football and farm animals. "I never lived on a farm, so that was nice," Thode said. Hayek said the letters gave her something to look forward to. "I was pretty excited to get my letter," Hayek said. "It was really fun and getting to know her. It was like meeting her in real life, except for in the letters and things I read." Marilee Dixon, who has retired from her work at Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center, received a letter from Keeler Smith, 10, a 5th grader. "It was a feel-good thing," Dixon said. "The young man told me all about his siblings and his dogs and his cat, what he did at school, and I would write back and tell him about my life and ask questions about school." Smith said, "I told her I had blue eyes and dirty blonde hair." Dixon, a former volunteer at YWCA, and Smith exchanged pictures of their pets. "He drew me a picture of one of his 3 dogs, and I sent him a picture of mine," Dixon said. When school was let out for the year due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Dixon wrote some encouraging words for Smith. "In the last letter, I told him I was really sorry his school year had to end that way," Dixon said, "but that I hoped he was learning with his schoolwork. I told him to enjoy his summer and things could get back to normal in the fall." Smith said, "It was nice getting to know someone and having someone to talk to every week." Halbach said the letters were being sent back and forth pretty consistently throughout the year. "We would get a letter every 3 or 4 days and someone would be sending them out," Halbach said. Rose Marie Scogmo was another participant in the Pen Pals program. She sent letters to Maya Heath, 11, a 5th grader. "I loved it," Scogmo said. "I did. She was delightful. She was just so full of life and energy. I really enjoyed it." Scogmo said at first she wasn't sure if she should write in cursive since it's not being taught as much in schools. "My main concern was, do I have to print or write? Could she read cursive?" Scogmo said. "We ended up doing a little of both." Scogmo said the two have something in common. They both attended a Christian school. Scogmo went to Holy Rosary when she was a child. The pen pals were to meet in person on May 11th. That had to be postponed due to concerns about the virus. "I was looking forward to meeting her," Scogmo said. Halbach said a pen pal party may be held in the fall. RSVP is typically a 1-year commitment, Halbach said. "I know the kids were looking forward to meeting face-to-face. Some have seen pictures, but it's just not the same." Wright County sees 14 new COVID-19 cases. Helgevold, new cases stem from more testing. The number of positive COVID-19 tests in Wright County has increased from 6 to 20 as of Monday morning, Wright County Emergency Management announced on Monday. The additional 14 cases came from an effort to increase testing at large employers in the county, according to Wright County Supervisor Carl Helgevold. In total, as of Monday, 716 Wright County residents have been tested for COVID-19, with the 20 positive results being 2.8% of the tested population, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. The IDPH also reports that 4 Wright County individuals have recovered from COVID-19. The breakdown of what age ranges the individuals fall into was not available by press time. A testing effort at Prestige Foods of Iowa outside Eagle Grove in late April resulted in 25 positive COVID-19 results in employees from 7 counties, including Wright. Helgevold said the county's attention to testing at other large employers is an attempt to be proactive in identifying individuals with the illness before they can spread it even further. Testing will continue through this week and into next. We're going through these businesses now, Helgevold said, not identifying which businesses are being tested. Some of these positives are asymptomatic. We'd rather err on the side of caution and get these tests done for these businesses before it becomes a problem. The county supervisor said that the testing is not being done in businesses in any one particular spot, but rather scattered across the county. He said that while there may be an uptick in positive results through this testing, it does not necessarily mean there is an outbreak at a business. As these positives come back, then we do the contact tracing to figure out where they have been and who they live with to make sure those people haven't been exposed or need tested, Helgevold said. With most of the state now opened up again, Helgevold reminds residents that it's still important to continue to follow prevention guidelines to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus. We just need to keep the social distancing, keep up with the good practices, he said. It is out there, and you see a lot of areas where the numbers are coming down, but we're seeing our numbers tick up. We just need to be prudent and not let our guard down. FD Council okays police contract. Union members to receive 1.5% raises. A new 1-year contract with unionized police officers was approved by the Fort Dodge City Council on Monday. The pact with public professional and maintenance employees Local 2003 goes into effect July 1st and runs through June 30th, 2021. Union members will receive a 1.5% raise on July 1st and a 1.5% raise on January 1st, 2021. The contract covers about 37 officers. The council approved the contract unanimously without debate. In other business, the council bought property at 811 4th Avenue North from Thomas Farhat of Slater for $35,000. The site will be cleared for redevelopment. Purchased light bars, in-car camera systems, and other electronics for police vehicles from Kel-Tec of Baxter for $44,120.21. Approved purchase of rock salt for the Public Works Department from Land O'Lakes Purina Animal Nutrition of Hutchinson, Kansas for $71 a ton. Purchased a dump body, crane, and hydraulics package for a public works truck from Highway Truck Equipment of Fort Dodge for $33,563. And gave final approval to vacating a right-of-way next to Amigos, 280 North 1st Street. On the way up, FDSH grad following his dream in L.A. Carson Aiden knows where he wants to end up, but getting there has been an adventurous ride in the process of building his dream. Aiden, a 2008 Fort Dodge senior high graduate, currently works for Fox Studios in Los Angeles. "I am a stage coordinator for Fox Studios," Aiden said. "I book the shows that use our stages and also manage the filming on the lot." On his way to Fox Studios, Aiden was in another big city before making the jump. "I was in Chicago before LA for 3 years working for Big Ten Network," Aiden said. "BTN is owned by Fox, so I was able to transfer into Fox." Aiden is enjoying the process, but eventually wants to be the one on set directing. "Eventually, I would like to get into directing and writing my own stuff," Aiden said. "Right now, I'm just going where the path leads me. I get to work directly with directors from Fox on different TV shows. I'm just climbing the ladder and really paying attention to the directors." With 15 stages on the Fox lot, Aiden has worked pretty close with the shows. "I've worked quite a bit with Modern Family, which is starting their final season," Aiden said. "I've worked on shows like 911, Fresh Off the Boat, and The Simpsons, to name a few. There is quite a variety of shows on the lot, as the majority are 30-minute shows. A lot of them are comedies, but every now and then a feature will come through." While working on set, Aiden has rubbed shoulders with some of the actors and actresses while putting shows together. "I'm pretty close to the set, so that requires me to work directly with them," Aiden said. It's almost like they're my coworkers on the shows that we have with the stars. I've worked with Randall Park, star Fresh Off the Boat, who directed their series finale. I've also been on set with Julia Bowen from Modern Family and Fred Savage. Even before hitting the Fox set, Aiden had some other interesting stops. Before L.A., I freelanced on the Bachelor season in Iowa, Aiden said. I also did some stuff for American Pickers and a bunch of other stuff. Even though the city is still on lockdown because of COVID-19, Aiden has been able to work from home. We're still in lockdown, but it's not so bad, Aiden said. Our area is pretty hilly and it's near a big park. We go on walks and it's beautiful outside. There is not a whole lot going on now because most things are shut down. A lot of my job is on set stuff. If a director says, I want to shoot a scene where we want to turn New York to a Christmas town and I need an ice rink, I have to coordinate to do what needs to happen to make it work. Taylor supports tax cuts, lower spending, seeks 4th congressional district seat. Editor's note. In the most recent in a series of articles introducing candidates on the June 2nd primary election ballots, Jeremy Taylor, a candidate for the Republican nomination in the 4th Congressional District, answers some questions from The Messenger. He faces State Senator Randy Feenstra, U.S. Representative Steve King, Steve Reeder, and Brett Richards in the race for the Republican nomination. The winner will face Democrat J.D. Scholten in the November general election. The 4th Congressional District includes Webster County and all of its surrounding counties. Question: what is your previous political experience? Answer: I served in the Iowa legislature from 2011 to 2013 and on the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors from 2015 to 2020 and was chairman in 2016. Question: what is your profession? Answer: I am an Army National Guard chaplain and major, an energy specialist with the Sioux City Schools, and a small business owner. Question: what is your educational background? Answer: I have a BA in English from Dowling College, Oakdale, New York, an MA in Literary Studies from the University of South Dakota, Vermilion, South Dakota, an AA from Cochise College, Arizona, in Intelligence Analyst Systems, and an MDiv from Liberty University, Lynchburg, Virginia. Question: why should the voters pick you? Answer: I am a proven leader with innovative solutions to real challenges. I have floor-managed significant legislation in the Iowa State House and helped lead in the 4th District's largest county on the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors. I am an officer, a major, and chaplain in the Iowa Army Guard, the only active service member in this primary race. 4th District Republicans deserve a nominee who can win. J.D. Scholten beat Steve King in Webster County when Governor Reynolds won it last time, just as J.D. Scholten won Woodbury by 3,000 in the same election. The same election I won by 4,000. That was before losing committee assignments critical to the 4th District, such as ag, judiciary, and small business. We need someone who can win and help take back the U.S. House. On the other hand, 4th District Republicans seek a true constitutionalist to replace Steve King, whom I respect, rather than an establishment go-along-to-get-along Republican. I am the most conservative candidate who can win the general election. I have an A ranking from the NRA, and I am the only legislator with an A ranking from the American Conservative Union. I am supported by over 60 4th District conservative activists, faith leaders, and elected officials, including the co-chair of the Iowa Trump campaign, the lead counsel for Iowa's Heartbeat Bill, and the ISU College Republicans. I will stay strong and firm in my convictions, never allowing money or influence, and instead be guided by constitutional principles, my faith and conscience, and the best interest of families in the 4th District. Question: in your opinion, what is the number one issue facing the nation, and what would you seek to do about it if elected? Answer: restoring Congress to limited constitutional principles to once again work for the people. This means passing a balanced budget amendment, a 1% annual reduction in spending, lower taxes, limited regulations, and term limits to return power to the people. All stand for life, the most fundamental issue of all, the Second Amendment, and a secure border to respect our national sovereignty. I'll seek to be a congressman who works for the people by taking up issues on committees everyday Iowans are facing, from our ag economy to everyday small businesses, fellow soldiers and veteran issues, and families who need the kind of servant leadership that led me to this call to service. Question: what would you recommend to rejuvenate the economy? Answer: as a small business owner, making investments is critically important. I'll seek to make the recent tax cuts permanent so job creators have more income, roll back the more than 60,000 pages of rules and regulations, and help curb the rising cost of healthcare using free market solutions. This allows individuals and business owners to keep more income. The federal government currently spends nearly 25,000 of our GDP, our entire private economy. Getting control of spending and allowing families and job creators to keep more income is sound economic and fiscal policy. Question: what would you do to bring jobs to rural Iowa? Answer: our 4th district has 1 in every 5 jobs related to ag, so we need to start with a strong ag economy, which affects every farmer, livestock producer, implement store, and ethanol plant. We need to have free but fair trade and move towards stability in our trading markets, increasingly diversifying additional markets in addition to China. We need to have congressmen who sits on the Ag Committee, which I would advocate, and I will fight for the renewable fuel standard against a reckless EPA, which continues to decimate our ethanol industry, for fair beef pricing for producers here in Iowa, indemnity payments for producers during the current pandemic. We also need to support USDA programs, which I've helped to advocate for at the county level, in order to bring fiber and broadband services, which so many rural businesses now depend on, but for which is often a struggle. Question: what changes in the healthcare system, if any, would you recommend in response to the coronavirus pandemic? Answer: we need to ensure that we have maximum flexibility for emergency situations such as this, including guaranteeing we can meet the needs of medical manufacturing and not be beholden to China during such a time as this. We also need to make sure that testing equipment and responders have adequate material and supplies. Generally speaking, we need to ensure that individuals can have health savings accounts that encourage the same tax parity as employer-based plans, which allow for portability from employer to employer or when losing employment. Increasing competition, portability, accessibility, and choice is key, such as shopping for insurance across state lines and transparency in medical services and prescription drug pricing. As a National Guardsman, we will need to continue training for such scenarios as this. With that said, our Guard has done an incredible job meeting the needs and response of delivering PPE and medical supplies in coordination with our healthcare system here in Iowa. Shining a light on hospital workers, Adrian Peters. Editor's note: in honor of National Hospital Week, The Messenger is delighted to feature 7 people who work at our local hospital, Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center. One person is featured a day over the course of 7 issues of The Messenger. Each one of these people hold important positions at the hospital that may not always be recognized. We hope you enjoy getting to know them. Adrian Peters, hometown Fort Dodge. What's your job at Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center? Staff pharmacist, inpatient pharmacy. How long have you worked at the hospital? 8.5 years. What's the toughest part about your job? I think the toughest part of being a pharmacist actually comes when I am working in retail. We all know drug prices can be high, deductibles have to be met, and copays may be more than expected. It's awful knowing that at times a patient can't afford to get their medications due to cost or have to choose between their medicine and other necessities. Luckily, there are often ways for a pharmacist to get a more cost-effective alternative, but unfortunately, not always. What's an interesting fact or two someone might not know about you? I studied abroad when I was an undergraduate at Luther College. I spent a 5-week J-term traveling in St. Petersburg and Moscow, Russia. Although I did not speak a word of Russian, it was a great experience. The history and culture are something I will never forget. This is the only time I have left the United States, and I decided to travel to the other side of the world. How has the COVID-19 pandemic changed what you do on a daily basis? The most obvious response to this question is that since COVID-19, we have to be more vigilant with our normal interactions. We have to wear a mask and wear gloves doing things that were once just second nature to us. A more specific change to my job includes closely monitoring our supply of particular medications. We all work together to make certain these medications continue to be utilized in the most appropriate ways to ensure they are available if or when they are needed. COVID has made us hypersensitive to things we all once took for granted. If you could have dinner with someone famous, who would it be? This is actually a tough question, but one person who I find particularly interesting is Marie Curie. She was a brilliant woman and the first woman to win a Nobel Prize in science, chemistry, and physics. Her accomplishments include things we use to this day in modern medicine, including X-rays. I would just love to sit, listen, and soak in her knowledge. What's the best part of your day? I love coming to work. I find value in the things we do. Sometimes successes are small. Other days, they are more significant. We have a great group of people in the pharmacy department who all work together for the benefit of our patients. FD School Board pays tribute to Springer. The Fort Dodge Community School District Board of Education paid tribute to one of its own, board member Steve Springer, who is battling esophageal cancer, by dedicating a school bell in his honor. Steve has made service to others an art form, Board President Stu Cochran said during the Monday night meeting. He has given new meaning to the word volunteer. Cochran continued that even well before Springer became a member of the school board, his service to the community and to the district was widely known. It's hard to put to words what Steve has been to Dodger athletics and activities, Cochran said. As a school board colleague, Steve has been supportive, insightful, and engaged. He's been a voice of reason and, when needed, entertained us with his unique sense of humor. Though Springer was absent from Monday's meeting, the board's tribute and recognition to Springer is intended to be a message of encouragement, Cochran said, presenting a school bell. The school bell represents sacrifice and service, Cochran explained. This district has a long-standing tradition of presenting a school bell to retiring school board members. Tonight, we are breaking with that tradition. By presenting this school bell to Steve, we are recognizing his ongoing service in hope that it reminds Steve that we are all in this with him together. Cochran and the other board members will give the school bell to Springer at a later date yet to be decided. Changes at FD Fire Department. Halverson retiring, Schreck promoted. The Fort Dodge Fire Department is saying goodbye to a veteran lieutenant and welcoming a newly promoted one. Lieutenant Mitch Halverson is retiring after 30 years of service. His last day on the job will be June 2nd. He began his fire department career on March 21, 1990. He was promoted to lieutenant in 2008. Halverson received a commendation for his work at the February 3, 1994 Eilers Hotel fire. That blaze, which destroyed a downtown landmark, left one person dead and 15 injured. Mayor Matt Bemrich read a proclamation of thanks for Halverson during Monday's city council meeting. Firefighter paramedic John Schreck was promoted to replace Halverson. He has been a firefighter since 2015. He has these certifications: Fire Officer 1, paramedic, fire instructor, hazardous materials technician, aircraft rescue and firefighting, fire department vehicle driver, operator, pumper, and fire department vehicle driver, operator, aerial. FD School Board okays search firm agreement. The search for a new director of human resources for the Fort Dodge Community School District kicked off Monday night as the Board of Education approved an agreement with a search firm to find candidates for the position. During the special meeting on Monday, the school board approved the resignation of Lisa Negus, who has been the district's human resources director since July 1, 2019. Her last day will be June 30th. In a previous search for a director of special education, the district found great success using a search firm, said Dr. Jesse Ulrich, superintendent. Because of that success, he proposed using Grundmeier Leader Search of Ankeny to find the district's next human resources director. Ulrich said that with this search, the plan is to cast a wide net and find the best fit for Fort Dodge. At this point, we're not going to predetermine whether we are looking for a principal or an educational leader who would like to serve in the role of Director of Human Resources, or someone who has professional qualifications and is already serving as a human resources person who is in the business world, Ulrich said. The proposal approved by the school board on Monday night will pay the company $7,341.28 to find candidates for the position. Under the approved proposal, GLS will recruit and screen candidates over the next few weeks. Formal interviews with the school board and hiring is expected to happen the week of June 22nd. The next school board meeting will be Tuesday, May 26th, due to the Memorial Day holiday. News brief. Fort Dodge street projects announced. Parts of some Fort Dodge streets will be closed beginning this week for various repairs. 8th Avenue North between 4th and 7th Streets will be closed beginning today for repairs to a storm sewer intake. Martin Luther King Drive between 4th Avenue North and 6th Avenue North will be closed beginning today. The intersection of 26th Avenue North and North 13th Street will be reduced to one lane beginning Wednesday for concrete repairs. Gold standard. Merman Cochran rewrote the Dodger girls' tennis history books. Growing up, Beth Merman and J.C. Cochran would always share court time together at the Dodger courts and Fort Dodge Tennis Club. A friendship grew, and by the time their high school days arrived, the Fort Dodge senior high graduates shared an unprecedented championship run together. Cochran and Merman are the only Dodger girls in school history to be crowned tennis champions. Cochran is the lone FDSH graduate to win a singles title, doing so on the singles side in 2013, and she later teamed up with Merman for the doubles crown in 2016. Merman also earned a co-ed title with Johnny Bowser as a sophomore in 2016, then repeated with Bowser the following year as well. During her first prep season, Cochran cruised to state gold to make history for FDSH. "I didn't really have a lot of expectations my freshman year," Cochran said. "It was my first time playing for a team and for a school, so that was really cool. It was really rewarding to win the individual title. I'd been training for years prior to the championship, so getting to compete for the Iowa State title was really special. Representing my hometown was also a really fun experience." After her freshman season, Cochran moved to Kansas City for training. She was homeschooled for the next 2 years. "Looking back, I definitely would have played all 4 years if I could," Cochran said. "Unfortunately, the training requirements for the goals I had meant that I had to move to Kansas City and online school, but I was so happy I got a chance to go back for my senior year." Heading into her sophomore season, Merman was ready to hit the nets. When she heard of Cochran's return, it was a match made for the state meet. "When I heard JC was finishing her career at Fort Dodge Senior High, I was even more excited for tennis season," Merman said. "We were family friends growing up, and to play with someone with a ton of experience and knowledge was a bonus. JC was one of my role models, so of course I was pumped." Merman admits she was a little nervous heading to the state meet as a sophomore with Cochran. "I was extremely nervous when JC and I headed into the finals," Merman said. "The Cochrans and my family still to this day talk about how awful my warm-up was. I don't think I could hit a ball in. I put so much pressure on myself because I didn't want to disappoint JC and my community. I was playing with one of Fort Dodge's finest. I had to step it up. We had worked so hard throughout the season, and I didn't want to cut it short." Even though Merman got off to a slow start, she was able to settle down and come through as a champion in the end. "I still remember the last point. JC was returning and I was up at the net, and I put away a backhand volley and we won. Good thing I got that one over the net. There were lots of hugs and lots of cheering. Certainly a moment I will never forget." After finishing her senior season on the Rutgers University tennis team this past season, Cochran is proud of the memory she made as a Dodger. "Winning the individual title was fun, but winning the doubles title with Beth was really special," Cochran said. "I grew up playing with the entire Merman family, so it was fitting that I got to come back and win it with Beth. At first, I was really on the fence about coming back to play one more season, and if it weren't for Beth, I might not have. But looking back at the memories of it, I'm very glad I did." The championship run wouldn't end for Merman, as she claimed a co-ed title with Bowser, who had won a state crown with Merman's older brother, Brian, in 2015. "Playing with Johnny was such a fun time," Merman said. "We grew up playing together, we knew each other's strengths, and built off of that. He was an animal at the net, and I liked hitting forehands. Watching my brother and Johnny win the state doubles title gave me another reason to give it my all. I wanted to make Johnny and my brother proud." Merman and Bowser wouldn't be done at one, as they repeated as co-ed champs in 2017. "Johnny and I dominated," Merman said. "Winning state again was such a fun time, and celebrating with our families was even better. I was proud to be his partner." Merman's senior season was a memorable cap to her standout career. "As they say, senior year flew by. My last volleyball season, my last basketball season, and my last season playing tennis for the Dodgers," Merman said. "Three of the things that gave me such memorable experiences and friendships that will last a lifetime. Receiving the Florence Nordman Award as top female senior athlete at FDSH was an incredible honor. I wasn't supposed to be unpacking my bag the first day of state my junior year. I told myself that disappointing appearance was not going to happen again. I lost once at state my senior year and finished fifth. Her time on the court and the people she surrounded herself with was something Merman cherishes to this day. Playing for Martha Miracle, coach, and Gloria Harrell, assistant coach, was such an awesome experience because they had been in my corner since I started picking up a racket, Merman said. I cherished the moments I spent with them. After the last point of my Dodger career, I realized how special my 4 years at FDSH were. Looking at my family, grandparents, coaches, and best friends in the crowd got me emotional. They had cried with me, they had laughed with me or at me, they had fought with me and never left. Those are my people in my corner for life. Being able to have my favorite people watch me compete in my favorite sport is one of the best feelings ever. My senior year may have gone by fast, but the memories I made sure didn't. Now entering her junior year at Winona State, Merman admits she will never forget her time in the red and black. I'm proud of being a Dodger. It sounds cliche, but it's true. Dodgers are the underdogs, the people who others doubt, the people who think we don't stand a chance, Merman said. We might not have the million-dollar facilities or the resources like other schools, but we do have passion. We do have grit. We do have talent. We will find a way fighting adversity. I am most proud of staying true to who I was on and off the courts. I focused on the kind of person I wanted to be and the kind of person I wanted other people to see. Being away at college has given me the opportunity to show that same hardworking, thoughtful, and passionate woman to others. Being a Dodger has helped me become the person I am today, and I am forever grateful for the community I grew up in. You are listening to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Tuesday, May 19th, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Richard Douglas. Richard Bruce Douglas, 88, of Ottumwa, died May 15th at the Good Samaritan Society, Ottumwa. Richard was born February 25th, 1932, in Fort Dodge. He was the son of David and Frances Peterson Douglas. Richard graduated from Fort Dodge High School in 1951. He served in the U.S. Air Force 133rd Aircraft Control and Warning Division as a radar operator from 1951 to 1953. On March 20th, 1955, Richard was united in marriage to Arlene Zerke. They made their home in Badger. Over the course of the next 40 years, Richard worked as a master plumber and pipe fitter. He owned and operated Douglas Plumbing and Heating from 1960 to 1970. In 1970, Richard joined the Plumbers and Steam Fitters Union, Local 33, Des Moines, working many industrial jobs. In 1992, Richard went to work for Indian Hills Community College, managing their heating and cooling systems. He retired in 1994. Richard was a longtime member of Badger Lutheran Church and currently an active member of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Ottumwa. He was an active member of the Kiwanis Club in Ottumwa. Richard enjoyed studying geology, air flight, and American history, as well as antique collecting and ringing bells for the Salvation Army. Richard was proud of his family and enjoyed many family activities, especially weekends at Dolliver Memorial Park and hosting Thanksgiving and Christmas family dinners. Richard's family remembers his hardworking nature and energetic presence. He lived a Christian witness and loved his family. Richard is preceded in death by his parents, David and Frances Douglas, his sister, Constance Brainerd, and spouse, Robert, and son, Paul Douglas. Family surviving to remember and celebrate Richard's life include his wife of 65 years, Arlene Douglas, his children, Linda Koppel and spouse, Don of Ottumwa, Holly Douglas of West Des Moines, Jay Douglas and spouse Julie of Grovetown, Georgia, Sarah Pook and spouse Clint of Cedar Falls, his grandchildren David Douglas and spouse Sarah, Adam Douglas and spouse Anna, Jessica Davis and spouse Tyler, Jason Douglas and spouse Katie, Amanda Douglas, Caleb Koppel, Carson, Alex, and Elliot Pook, and great-grandchildren Connor, Liam, and Jameson Douglas, Scarlett, Sloan, Olivia, and Rowan Douglas. Services will be held 11 a.m. Thursday, May 21st at Badger Lutheran Church. Interment will follow in North Lawn Cemetery, Fort Dodge. Military honors will be presented by VFW Post number 1856. Arrangements are entrusted to Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. All guidelines from the IDPH will be followed by Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. The use of face masks is encouraged. Nancy Mabe. Nancy Jean Raymond Mabe, 87, of Fort Dodge, passed away on Saturday, May 16th at Friendship Haven Simpson Health Center. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, May 20th at Memorial Park Cemetery with Reverend John Elkin officiating. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, social distancing must be followed by attendees. Memorials may be directed to the family. Historic Bruce Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Online condolences may be left for the family at brucesfuneralhome.com. Nancy was born November 17, 1932, in Fort Dodge, the daughter of Frank Raymond and Amelie Molly Katzebeck and her husband, Harry Lanning. She is preceded in death by her parents. Nancy had four sisters, Helen, Dorothy, Maxine, Betty, and one brother, Frank, all deceased except her sister, Betty. She married Richard L. Mabe, deceased, and had three children, Rick and spouse Peggy, Randy, spouse Carol, and Debbie, born on their anniversary. Nancy had awesome grandchildren, Nick and spouse Heather, Cody and spouse Matt, Jake and spouse April, Michelle, Jesse and spouse Charbel, Barb and spouse Jeremy, Kaylin, Samantha, Sam, Michael, and Lindsay, spouse Jacob. Those grandkids gave Nancy 16 great-grandkids. Nancy loved her family, worked hard, and loved reading and playing bingo. Nancy lived her last 18 years at Friendship Haven due to a stroke. She loved going places, out to eat whenever she could, and visiting. Thanks to mirror image Evelyn and daughter-in-law Carol Mabe for always making Mom beautiful by doing her hair. And on behalf of my entire family, we want to take this opportunity to thank the Friendship Haven staff for taking such great care of Nancy. Thank you all. We love you. Roger Lenning. Roger A. Lenning, 78, of Humboldt, passed away on Saturday, May 16th at Iowa Methodist Medical Center in Des Moines. He is survived by his wife, Nancy, children Chris Lenning of Fort Dodge, and daughter Andrea George and spouse Sean of Humboldt. Grandchildren Keaton Lenning, Caleb Lenning, Addison Lenning, Zachary George, and Haley George, and brother Doug Lenning and spouse Jan of Dakota City. He was preceded in death by his parents, sister Sherry Kubley, and sister-in-law Patricia Lenning. Funeral services will be held on Thursday, May 21st at 11 a.m. at the Mason Lindhart Funeral and Cremation Service. A visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the start of the funeral service at the funeral home. Terry R. Terrell. Terry R. Terrell, 81, of Pocahontas, passed away on Friday, May 15th at the Pocahontas Manor Care Center in Pocahontas. Private family services will be held on Thursday, May 21st at the Powers Funeral Home in Pocahontas. Burial will be in Memorial Park Cemetery in Sioux City. Powers Funeral Home in Pocahontas is handling arrangements. For online condolences and obituaries, visit powersfh.net. Julia Anna Ford. Julia Anna Ford, 83, formerly of Gilmore City, died May 17th at Pearl Valley Rehab and Nursing Facility in Sutherland. Private graveside services will be held Friday, 11 a.m. at St. John's Catholic Cemetery, Gilmore City. Harris Funeral Home is assisting the family, where a complete obituary can be read at harrisfuneralservices.com. Francis Martin. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, a private family mass of Christian burial for Francis A. Lynch Martin will be held at St. John's Catholic Church in Clarion. Robert Watson. Private family funeral services will be held Tuesday. A public visitation will be from 3 to 5 p.m. Monday, May 25th at Lentz Funeral Home, Algona. Social distancing practices will be followed. An editorial. Manson Grocery Store effort deserves support. T-shirt sale is part of the campaign to raise the needed money. Manson Mayor Dave Anderson just might be the only Iowa mayor whose image adorns a T-shirt. Those shirts are not the result of some kind of ego trip by Mayor Anderson, however. He told the Messenger that he was humbled and honored that anyone would buy something with him on it. In fact, the shirts are part of an effort to raise at least $200,000 so that the community's grocery store can be reopened. The store closed in November, and since then, Manson residents have had to go out of town to do any significant grocery shopping. About $185,000 has been raised. The shirts being sold by State of the Art, a sign shop in Manson, are part of the effort to bring in enough money to reach the $200,000 goal and maybe exceed it. That money will be used to buy the store building and fix it up. The list of things that have to be done include roof repairs and installing a new point-of-sale system. The floors need to be stripped and refinished, shelves must be rearranged, and the whole place could use a coat of fresh paint. The goal is to have the store open early next year. Starting up a grocery store from essentially nothing is a daunting task, but the people in Manson are not shying away from it. They are determined to have a place in their community where they can buy a full selection of food on a regular basis. In their effort, they can draw inspiration from the people in Gowrie, who were faced with the same situation and now have a new supermarket. We salute the board that is leading the way to restart the Manson grocery store. We urge the residents of Manson and the surrounding areas to support the project. And we thank Mayor Anderson for being a good sport about having his image on a t-shirt. News of record for May 19th, 2020. Magistrate Court, Webster County, Tuesday, May 18th. Failure to appear. Miguel Angel Lopez, 25, 1507 2nd Avenue South, transferred to District Court. Brandon Ayala, no age given, Denison, bond posted. Interference. Miguel Angel Lopez, 25, 1507 2nd Avenue South, transferred to District Court. Driving under suspension. Xanadu Roques, 29, 1338 3rd Avenue Northwest, Apartment 16. $397.50 plus 5 days jail, suspended. No insurance. Xanadu Roques, 29 of 1338 3rd Avenue Northwest, Apartment 16. $397.50. Operating non-registered vehicle. Xanadu Roques, 29, 1338 3rd Avenue Northwest, Apartment 16. $127.50. Wednesday. Assault causing bodily injury. Marlo Yvette Stark, 52, 429 Central Avenue, Apartment 204. Preliminary hearing set for May 22nd. Obstructing prosecution. Beth Ann Quario, 38, of Colville. Preliminary hearing set for May 22nd. No insurance. Beth Ann Quario, 38, of Colville, continued 180 days. Violation of no contact order. Peyton Bobby Joe Harrison, 19, of 733 Avenue C. Court date to be determined. Second degree attempted burglary. Edward Jace Brown, 29, of 917 11th Avenue Southwest. Preliminary hearing set for May 22nd. Fifth degree criminal mischief. Edward Jace Brown, 29, of 917 11th Avenue Southwest. Continued 180 days. Assault. Edward Jace Brown, of 29, of 917 11th Avenue Southwest, continued 180 days. Possession of synthetic marijuana with intent to deliver. Persilis Tyreek Gully, 21, of 1406 8th Avenue South, preliminary hearing waived. Interference causing bodily injury. Persilis Tyreek Gully, 21, of 1406 8th Avenue South, preliminary hearing waived. Driving while barred. Mary Kay Cabell, no age given, of 425 North 18th Street, preliminary hearing set for May 27th. Speeding, Mary J. Cabell, no age given, 425 North 18th Street, continued 180 days. Thursday, driving while barred, Danielle Marie Freeman, 44, of 644 2nd Street Northwest, preliminary hearing waived. Driving under suspension, Danielle Marie Freeman, 44, of 644 2nd Street Northwest, continued 180 days. No insurance. Danielle Marie Freeman, 44, of 644 2nd Street Northwest, continued 180 days. Operating non-registered vehicle. Danielle Marie Freeman, 44, 644 2nd Street Northwest, continued 180 days. New title transfer violation. Danielle Marie Freeman, 44, of 644 2nd Street Northwest, continued 180 days. Operating while intoxicated, second offense. Zachary Thomas Lucina, 30, of Moreland. Court date set for May 27th. Failure to obey traffic control device. Zachary Thomas Lucina, 30, of Moreland. Continued 180 days. Failure to appear. Kiara Ann Miracle, 27, of 1417 7th Avenue North. Court date set for May 27th. Driving under suspension, John Lee Schoenwetter, 42, of Algona, court date set for May 27th, and David Brian Ammerman, no age given, of 312 South 8th Street, $397.50. Assault causing bodily injury, Elizabeth Catherine Crowley, 36, of Otho, court date set for May 27th. Failure to stop an assured distance, Rebecca Smith, no age given, of 2008 South 12th Street, $330. No insurance in an accident, Rebecca Smith, no age given, of 2008 South 12th Street, $735. Friday, revocation of probation, Jordan Michael Mefford, 41, of 1320 2nd Avenue North, Apartment 3, transferred to district court. Third degree theft, Tyler Lamont Vandeveer, 26, of 1706 3rd Avenue South, preliminary hearing set for May 29th. Driving under suspension, Elmer Matul Gomez, 29, of Clarion, $397.50. No driver's license, Mason Michael Hendrickson, 14, of 3132 12th Avenue North, court date to be determined. Monday, violation of no contact order, Michael Olin Hilton, 26, of Humboldt, hearing date to be determined. Failure to appear, Michael Olin Hilton, 2 counts, 26, of Humboldt, transferred to District Associate Justice. Disorderly conduct, Jacob Wood, 36, no address given, $195. Public intoxication, Shauna Christine Searcy, 47, of 1217 4th Avenue North, $195. Third degree theft, Treva Marie Peterson, 30, of 2805 10th Avenue North, Apartment 7, preliminary hearing waived. Driving while barred, Treva Marie Peterson, 30, of 2805 10th Avenue North, Apartment 7, preliminary hearing waived. No insurance, Treva Marie Peterson, 30, of 2805 10th Avenue North, Apartment 7, continued 180 days. Driving under suspension, Treva Marie Peterson, 30, of 2805 10th Avenue North, Apartment 7, continued 180 days. Operating while intoxicated, first offense, Kennedy Denise Hattelstad, 23, of 241 7th Avenue North, court date to be determined. Open container, Kennedy Denise Hattelstad, 23, of 241 7th Avenue North, continued 180 days. Failure to maintain control, Kennedy Denise Hattelstad, 23, of 241 7th Avenue North, continued 180 days. No insurance in an accident, Kennedy Denise Hattelstad, 23, of 241 7th Avenue North, continued 180 days. Driving under suspension, Martina Ellen Elliott, no age given, Stratford, $397.50. Speeding, Emma Bade, no age given, 1902 2nd Avenue North, $220.65. Police log for Fort Dodge, Friday. A kidnapping was reported in the 1300 block of 4th Avenue South. Theft was reported in the 1900 block of 2nd Avenue North. A fight was reported in the 1200 block of South 22nd Street. A burglary in progress was reported in the 800 block of South 14th Street. A burglary was reported in the 500 block of South 16th Street. Theft was reported in the 700 block of 7th Avenue North. Three domestic calls were reported. Theft was reported in the 900 block of 3rd Avenue North. A fight was reported in the 100 block of North 8th Street. Theft was reported in the 1500 block of 3rd Avenue North. Theft was reported in the 1600 block of 3rd Avenue North. Shots fired were reported at the intersection of North 14th Street and 3rd Avenue North. Saturday, an assault was reported in the 1400 block of South 15th Street. Three domestic calls were reported. Criminal mischief was reported in the 400 block of North 819th Street. Harassment was reported in the 1400 block of 7th Avenue South. Criminal mischief was reported in the 1600 block of Floral Avenue. Harassment was reported in the 800 block of South 16th Street. A fight was reported in the 200 block of Avenue M West. Harassment was reported in the 3000 block of 20th Avenue North. A fire was reported in the 1300 block of 1st Avenue South. Theft was reported in the 2700 block of 8th Avenue South. Theft was reported at the intersection of 2nd Avenue North and North 27th Street. A hit and run was reported in the 2200 block of 2nd Avenue North. Sunday, A burglary in progress was reported in the 100 block of Avenue M West. A burglary was reported in the 1200 block of North 11th Street. Theft was reported in the 400 block of South 6th Street. Counterfeiting was reported in the 1100 block of 6th Avenue North. A hit and run was reported in the 1600 block of South Triton Drive. Harassment was reported in the 1300 block of 3rd Avenue Northwest. A hit and run was reported in the 100 block of South 17th Street. A fight was reported in the 1200 block of 6th Avenue North. A hit and run was reported in the 10 block of North 29th Street. Four domestic calls were reported. A fire was reported in the 700 block of 7th Avenue North. And that does it for today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Tuesday, May 19th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.
This is Tom Hatton with an Irish short take from the book A Culinary History of Iowa, and the first article we're going to read from the book is entitled Exploring Iowa. Located in the heart of America, Iowa is the land between two rivers, a region of the Midwest distinguished by a surprisingly rich, diverse cultural and culinary history. Between the forests of the eastern United States and the grasslands of the Great Plains to the west, Iowa's gently rolling landscape extends westward from the Mississippi River, which forms the state's entire eastern border. The Missouri River forms the western border, making Iowa the only U.S. state with two parallel rivers defining its borders. Rivers were the early highways, bringing explorers, trappers, traders, and settlers to the Iowa prairie. Centuries before the Europeans arrived, however, various Native American tribes, including the Sac, Fox, Sioux, Iowa, Meskwaki, and others, lived, hunted, and farmed across the region. The meaning of the name Iowa depends on who you ask. Traditionally, it has been described as an Iowa word, meaning the beautiful land, although others say that Iowa itself is the French spelling of Iuawa, a name meaning sleepy ones, a name given in jest to the Iowa tribe by the Dakota Sioux. Living off the land defined the food and farming traditions of the tribes like the Iowa, whose history is carefully recreated at Living History Farms in Urbandale. Iowa farmers raised corn, beans, melons, and squash. Women did the farming in the Iowa culture, while men were responsible for hunting and making tools. Iowa families were subsistence farmers, raising just enough for their family to survive throughout the year and having a little put away in case of a bad year. The Iowa had separate summer, winter, and traveling lodges. Bark houses called nachachi kept the Iowa cool during hot summer months, while winter mat houses called chakiruta, made from layers of sewn cattail leaves, protected the Iowa from harsh winters and stayed around 50 degrees inside. While traveling on hunting expeditions, the Iowa lived in a chibo thraji, or teepee, made from buffalo hides. Their villages also contain sweat lodges, food drying racks, cooking areas, work areas, hide scraping rocks, pottery pits, and gardens. At Living History Farms, historical interpreters at the 1700 Iowa farm discuss hunting, hide processing, fur trading, tool making, gardening, food processing, and the roles that Iowa men and women played in each. Interpreters used both recreated bone and stone tools and reproduced trade items to perform daily tasks. By the era of the 1700 Iowa farm depicted at Living History Farms, the first Europeans had seen the land that would become Iowa. Had history taken a different course centuries ago, Iowans might be known for their unique brand of French cuisine with a distinctly Midwestern flair. In the late 1600s, European explorers began paddling up and down the Mississippi River, passing along Iowa's eastern border. The first to visit Iowa were Frenchmen. Louis Joliet led a crew accompanied by Father Marquette, a Catholic priest. In 1673, the expedition arrived in the area that includes Pikes Peak State Park near the Iowa town of McGregor. It would be almost 150 years after Marquette and Joliet sailed along Iowa's eastern border before white settlers began moving inland to farm Iowa's incredibly rich topsoil. In the meantime, trappers and traders began exploring the rivers that fed into the mighty Mississippi. The French established some trading posts that would grow into Midwestern cities, including St. Paul, Minnesota, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, and St. Louis, Missouri. In the 1780s, a young Frenchman named Julien Dubuque learned that there were rich deposits of lead ore on the west side of the Mississippi River near Prairie du Chien. Lead was valuable because it was used to make ammunition for guns and cannons. Dubuque lived among the Native Americans in the area and mined the ore. Dubuque set up lead mines near the location of the city that bears his name and lived in the area until he died in 1810. And that was an excerpt from A Culinary History of Iowa by Darcy Doherty, Malsey, and other offbeat stuff by Eric Jones, Dan Coffey, and Barrett Thorkelson.